Roman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. It is 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, which means Caroline is here for Jared versus Joe. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how we doing?
I'm doing well, except for the fact that I was listening to Robbie and Retro this morning,
okay,
and I thought there was great, nuanced, reasoned conversation on the Titans in the draft. And
until
then they let Kaharski in there, and it was just from that moment on, Titans don't need to look at a quarterback. They have a quarterback. They can't draft three quarterbacks. That C.J. Stroud, they didn't ruin the draft pick. I'm like, my God, Joe, what were you guys doing this morning? P.K. was ruining everything this morning. You guys had good conversations about Drake May and about everything else, and then, you know, P.K. sits there and plays revisionist history as far as what happened last year at the draft.
Yeah, well, the thing that ticked me off the most was his Isaiah Wilson take, which he couldn't seem to understand, like that two things shouldn't be conflated. But, you know, we're all mad at PK, so I guess we're kind of on the same team on that. In fact, I may have to go back because I heard your last segment, and as I told you earlier, I shouldn't have brought that up without reviewing it thoroughly, because I forgot some stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, what the hell is he talking about? So I may have to revisit that tomorrow, too.
There you go. All right, time for Jared versus Joe.
Jared Stillman versus Joe Rexroad, now on Stillman & Company.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Jared versus Joe is presented by Pella Windows and Doors versus Nashville. Caroline, go.
Okay, I'm Amy Adams Strunk, and you are the general manager of the Tennessee Titans. Let's say Drake May falls to the Titans at 7. You, the general manager, you're in favor of Drake May. Give me your pitch to draft Drake May. If you are against Drake May, give me what compensation you would need to trade back. Jared, you go first.
I would be for Drake May. The argument I would make is whatever the grade is and what the coach says about the quarterback, right? So in this instance, I mean, I don't have the coach with me, but I'll use Tim Hasselbeck as my example, right? For what he said on your show, Caroline, about how, like, he's sat down with Drake May, he's been around Drake May, he's watched all the film on Drake May, and he thinks that the idea that Drake May would fall in the draft is absolutely ludicrous. So let's assume that that's the opinion of my coach because, well, Tim Hasselbeck is a coach. So let's use that, right? So I'm using that opinion right there where, I mean, Caroline, you're the one who asked the question, and Tim was just like, oh, yeah, you take him. Like that.
Tim's been salivating over Drake May for a year.
Here's the other thing I would say. Will Levis is going to be 25 years old this year. Drake May is going to be 22. Which means that Drake May has significant room to grow and get better that is much bigger than the room that Levis has, because while Levis still has room to grow and get better, Levis is more towards his, you know, biological peak of 28 years old. Also, if you were to draft May, who is a higher prospect than Levis, even a higher prospect than you had on your board last year, because you took a freaking guard at 11, I think that, you know, okay, we're getting 5 years here on a rookie contract as opposed to the 3 years that are left for Levis. And so it all comes down to, is it better to have May and then I would ask for a second rounder in next year's draft to Denver to see if they would make the move to take Levis, because I think they might, because Jared Stidham's their quarterback and all the quarterbacks will be gone by 12. But would we be better off with that than we would be with Levis and, say, Joe Alt or Brock Bowers or Dallas Turner? And between that and what Tim has said about Drake May and the age of Drake May and the extra year of the extra 2 years of rookie contract, that would be my pitch as far as Drake May is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, I this is a clear indication that we need the draft badly, because I actually totally agree with what Hasselbeck said. I think it's been fantasy all along that he's going to fall. I mean, he might fall to 3.
Oh, I think he's going. I think he's going at 2.
Yeah, but if we're going to be in this hypothetical scenario, I mean, I'll argue for him too. You know, look, I agree with the contract thing, what Jared said. I think the biological age thing is not that. I mean, you're talking about peak. Well, that's not the peak age of a quarterback of a quarterback's best football in the NFL. The peak age of the best football in the NFL has kind of gone up to about 33, 34. So, sure. You know, that doesn't mean that much, but the contract does, having that fifth year option. And so, I mean, I do think that Drake May is a better prospect than Will Levis. You know, comparing Drake May now to Will Levis a year ago as a prospect, he's a better prospect. Also, if we're, you know, this exact time a year ago, the consensus, I mean, pretty much the overwhelming evaluation of Will Levis is that he was going to go on the top five. So, you know, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's as far apart as you might think, because we know what happened with him in the draft. But my case would be, look, we believe this is the best player in the draft now. We believe this is a great quarterback. We hope Will is a great quarterback. We think he could be, but we absolutely believe this is. And if you have that certainty, then you cannot pass it up. I mean, I think that's an easy pitch. And I would think that would be convincing. You know, it's just a – now, of course, if I'm Amy Armstrong, I'm coming back and say, so why the heck is he available right now?
Sure.
You know, I don't have a great answer for that. But if you have the conviction – if I have the conviction that he is that level of prospect and that you can't possibly pass him up, that's all you need to say.
So, I mean, I think
And if he's that great of a prospect, you might have to answer to Amy of, tell me why we should pass on him.
I agree, because the board will be up there and she'll be in the room. So, yeah. If it's like we've got, and the grades are next to him, so if it's like we've got Drake May as the second greatest graded player in this draft, and he's a 6.95. And I'm trying to tell you that Olu Fashanu at a 6.45 is who we should take as opposed to the 6.95. I mean, I could see the owner wanting to know that. So what's crazy to me is I do think that there is a world where Drake May is available to the Titans, but it requires the Giants to pass on him. I could see the Patriots at 3. I think he's going to go at 2 to Washington, but let's say Jaden Daniels goes at 2. I am convinced there's a chance the Patriots actually do think J.J. McCarthy's the best quarterback in this class. The way Charles Joe said on your show that he heard somebody say that the Patriots have J.J. McCarthy number one. And the reason I think this is because Robert Kraft, Gerard Mayo, you know, Gerard Mayo has never coached anywhere else. He's never played anywhere else. So the only thing that Gerard Mayo knows at quarterback and the most successful thing that Robert Kraft knows at quarterback is what?
Brady.
Tom Brady. So I think I could see Kraft and Mayo seeing that Michigan helmet combined with the intangibles of he's a winner. He's tough because he played for Harbaugh. He's a great leader. He's smart. And saying, like, that's Tom Brady. And the knock on J.J. is, well, he didn't do that much in college. Well, Tommy didn't do that much in college. I could see it. Does it sound stupid? Sure.
Yes.
But the Patriots also thought it was a good idea to make Matt Patricia the offensive coordinator. So, like, it's not like we're out of the realm of them doing things that are stupid. That's the one thing, is I could see New England doing that and taking J.J. at 3 if they were afraid that they couldn't move or whatever. And then Arizona's going to say, we got to take Marvin Harrison. And then the Chargers, we got to take Malik Nabers. And then it would require the Giants to pass on Drake May. But I don't think it's impossible, though I do think it's not very likely.
Well, helmet scouting of any sort is idiotic. But, you know, the winner thing is real. I mean, look, Dan Brewer came on a show this week and he said, I agree, I don't think you just dismiss, you know, winning to that level, right? I mean, you know, and the fact that
I do.
Is J.J. McCarthy. Okay, well, I think
who won the championship last year?
I understand, Jared.
Who won the championship year before that? Who won the championship? So you want Mac Jones?
Well, everybody did. Everybody thought he was amazing.
He's a winner! Yeah, when he's got Devontae Smith and that great defense and Saban and JJ when he's got the Joe Moore offensive line and Blake Corum and that defense and Harbaugh. Yes, he's very
good. Also, and you did also watch the Rose Bowl in which when it came down to it, they had to have him make plays to the air or they don't come back and force overtime, right? That's what I'm talking about.
JJ McCarthy you almost threw an interception on the first play of the game.
Did you watch through the end of the game or no?
I did. I watched through the end of the game. Okay. Jalen Milroe
so
tried
the
to
plays
be
he made.
At the end.
All right. But before that, J.J. McCarthy had to make plays with his arm to make it even possible to be in overtime. That's
I would not draft J.J. McCarthy in the top 16 of this draft. Like, if you wanted to tell me, like, when you get into the J.P. Lossman territory at, like, 24 or something, you could take J.J., fine. I'm not taking J.J. in the top 16 of this draft. Just because he won at Michigan.
Top five, but he's definitely going in the top five. Well,
oh, he's definitely going, but I'm not. I would not take him in the top 15. That's just me. What's next, Caroline?
How high on your list of positional priority is what I'll call it, is wide receiver? Joe, you go first.
So I talked about this today, and it's sort of – so straight up just rate the positions by need. I have it behind tackle – edge, and I have it behind inside linebacker because the Titans don't have one. I mean, they have Kenneth Murray Jr., and, you know, maybe they can turn him into a consistent player. So that's just as position of need right now. I have it behind that because they have two good receivers this year. You know, and then they have whatever. I mean, Treylon Burks is – we'll see if he can do anything. But they have two good receivers this year. So in terms of just rating the positions – that's how I have it. That said, look, if Neighbors is there, you know, and they have Neighbors rated higher than all, by all means, take Neighbors. I'm all for taking a receiver if you have a great football player at that position because you are going to have to pretty soon. You're going to be changing over. You need a young receiver to grow with Levis beyond Ridley, who's in his late 20s. So – that's kind of a, you know, I understand that's sort of like a two-pronged answer, but as just as a need by position, right now, to me, it's not screaming. Like, you can't function this season if you don't draft a receiver. To me, this defense can't function if it doesn't have another edge rusher, more help on the interior of the defensive line, and a linebacker, and then actually they need a safety too, but Like they're going to be in huge trouble if they don't address those positions, starting with offensive tackle, right? They're not going to be in huge trouble if they don't address receiver. But you got a great receiver that you can take? Yes, do that.
I think that young receiver is absolutely a need on this team. I mean, I think every team needs at least three receivers, and you don't have three receivers. So not only do you have two, you know, you have an old receiver and a, you know, declining veteran receiver because, again, Ridley, and we can talk about, you know, I actually agree with Joe that I do think that quarterbacks age much better, but 28 for a receiver is absolutely a peak year biologically, and he's, what, 29 now? So he has hit that peak, and now he's on the back nine. So I
think
he says
he's 25.
Yeah. So this team, and not only that, his game is speed, right? Like, DeAndre's game is not speed. His game is speed. And so that's another. He runs down the field. And so that's another reason. I think this team absolutely has a need for a young receiver. I think that this team absolutely needs three receivers that they can count on. And, you know, it sucks because Burks has the talent, but you can't count on him. And Westbrook Akine, you can count on him, but he doesn't have the talent. And so it'd be really nice if you could kind of mix those two together and find somebody like that. But I mean, receiver is probably right now, as far as the money's concerned, the second or third most valuable position in the NFL. And as I did the math, you are 17th in the league in receiver. So you could absolutely use another receiver that could come in here and could develop into an impact player or be an impact player right away. I mean, the Titans didn't need a receiver in 2019 because the way we looked at it at the time was Corey Davis, Adam Humphries, Taywan Taylor. They don't need a receiver. They drafted A.J. Brown. I'd say that worked out pretty well. So I think they're kind of in a similar spot. The other thing I would say is if I were the Titans, I would think about after the draft, broaching DeAndre Hopkins about a one-year extension. Now, you can finagle it however you want, you know, but I'm talking about a true one-year extension for DeAndre to make this one-year deal into a two-year deal so that DeAndre gets some guaranteed money next year and doesn't have to, you know, face the possibility of going into free agency, but also so that they don't get DeNico Autry this year, which is, yeah, they got a guy who's a little up there in age and he's not going to be good for forever, but he's good enough right now and his skills are solid enough that I just think that if Levis is your quarterback, you might as well get one more year out of DeAndre just because you I just don't want you to be in the situation you are with Autry where you're trying to sign him, but you didn't sign him ahead of time, and so now you've lost out and DeAndre goes somewhere else.
But see, you didn't answer the question. Maybe you're answering it better than I am, but you didn't answer it the same way. Like, those positions I mentioned, they can't function. They're not going to be able to function as a football team if they don't have a left tackle. They don't have one right now.
Sure.
To me, as a defense, they don't have a – you have to have a linebacker. You have to have someone besides Jeffrey Simmons on the defensive line. Autry really takes away, like, two positions in a way. So, like, those are bigger needs just on their own. I don't disagree. You could use one. It would be great to have one. Like I said, if the best player is a receiver, do it. And then I think that 38 pick has to be a little bit shaded toward need. Like, you have to get a tackle then.
Well, I mean, I'm nervous right now about both tackle spots, right guard. I mean, when I hear that Sadiq Charles might be the starting right guard of the Titans, that does not make me feel very good about that. I'm nervous about safety. I'm nervous about inside backer. I'm nervous on the defensive line. And they still don't have a punt returner unless they're going to try Kyle Phillips back there. And I don't even know how they're going to do kickoffs. You know, I don't know what that's going to look like.
And this year at receiver, you have two good ones. Yeah, we'll see how many years Ridley has left. I agree with you on the Hopkins extension, but this year you have two good ones. You have reliability in NWI, and yeah, we'll see on Burks. That's a way better situation than all these positions you just mentioned.
Yeah, I guess what I would say though is I feel like in order to say the traditional sense is like two starting corners, right? Like two starting corners, three linebackers, two safeties, four defensive linemen, that's 11. But really, you need three corners to start. And I think you need three wide receivers to start, and you don't have three wide receivers. Like, sure, you can put Burks out there or NWI out there, but I don't think you have that third receiver that's out there. And that does kind of take me to Bowers, because I actually do think that Bowers could probably kill two birds with one stone, which is, if they were to draft Bowers, I, unlike Chris Sanders earlier today, am not sold on Chig Okonkwo at tight end. Bowers could be the tight end, and then he could also flex out and be a slot. And I think he could be pretty good at it in the NFL. So I certainly think, though, like, I find three receivers being what teams need, and you only have two. More Jared versus Joe coming up next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jared versus Joe is presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Caroline, go.
Jared, you go first. Joe Alt's off the board. He goes to the Chargers at 5 or anyone above you. Now what?
So at that point, I have to assume that means that we're going to say what? The three quarterbacks are gone, Harrison, Neighbors, and Alt?
Yes, Harrison, Neighbors, Alt, and the three quarterbacks. Or four quarterbacks, Harrison, Alt.
Okay, well, in that case, I'm taking Malik Neighbors. So,
well,
I mean,
if it's the three quarterbacks and the receivers.
So if that's the case, then I'd love to trade back for just an absolute haul. But there's no guarantee that Minnesota, Denver, the Raiders, that they're going to want to do that. Right? Like, it's easy to say, trade back! Well, okay, but what if they don't want to? If I don't feel like I'm getting something that's going to give me a top 40 pick in next year's draft, I'm not moving back to move out of the elite player category. So I believe that there are 8 elite players in this draft, 9 if you want to count Adunze. I go the three quarterbacks, Neighbors, Harrison, Alt, Bowers, and Dallas Turner. And I will take one of Bowers or Dallas Turner or whatever. Like, I will take an elite player before I will trade back and pick up non-top 60 picks, non-high picks for next year that can equal an elite kind of player, I will take the elite player before moving back to take a Fashanu who might be a good player but not profile as an elite player, even if I don't have that necessary need at edge right now. If Dallas Turner is an elite pass rusher, I'll take him as opposed to moving back for a non-elite something else.
If we're doing the only three quarterbacks gone at that point, I'm happily taking Roma Dunze. I feel like a lot of the conversation lately has centered on, Harrison Neighbors. And, I'd rank it that way, Harrison Neighbors, Adunze. But I do think they should be considered a trio. And maybe this is prisoner of the moment from Indy and his media session. I think the guy's going to be a star. I do. I think Roma Dunze is going to be a star in this league. I think he's a great player. So I would happily take him over. I generally agree with what Jared said about great players as opposed to trading back. Now, what's the compensation? Talk to somebody. If somebody really wants in there and I can get to a point where I still feel good about taking Olu in particular, then I would consider that. But my first instinct is, sign me up for Roma Dunze. I just think he's kind of been forgotten in the receiver talk here.
So I actually think that Harrison and Neighbors are lumped together. Adunze is in another category, and then there's everybody else after that.
This is the Jared Stillman rating system? Is this using your PFF rankings?
No, this is just how I feel. Like, I like Adunze, but I don't think Adunze is as good as Malik Neighbors.
Like I said, I'm ranking him third, but I think they're in the same tier. I absolutely do.
So I have Adunze.
I love all three of them in the NFL.
So – I think there are eight elite prospects in this draft, and I have Adunze ninth. And if you want to make the argument for Adunze as an elite prospect, I will listen to it. I will not listen to you try to tell me that J.C. Latham, for instance, is an elite prospect when I got people like Trevor telling me, he might actually profile better as a guard. Okay, gone. But Adunze I can hear as an elite prospect. So if the Titans really love Adunze and they're like, yes, we think that Adunze, like Joe, we think that he's at the same level as Harrison or Neighbors, then that's the same as Bowers and Turner and those guys. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to sit there and say, okay, I've got Bowers as an elite player and Turner as an elite player, but he doesn't play offensive line. So at seven, I'm going to draft Fashanu, who is not rated as an elite player. And that is what I'm afraid of people wanting them to do.
That's how you become a bad football team. That's how you become a bad football team.
And that's what I'm afraid that the fans want them to do. And with the Titans, they took a guard with the 11th pick last year. So I don't know what I don't know what they'll end up doing. But to your point, that is exactly how you become a bad team.
Caroline? On to the next. Joe, you go first. Let's say Joelt is there at seven. Is it as simple? Is it as much of a no-brainer as I feel like we're told to believe that if he's there at seven, you take him?
Well, no. Look, that would be my pick, and I'm not. Look, I'm not pretending to grind film on draftees, I don't do it, so I don't pretend to do it. Based on the information that I've consumed, I would go that way. But again, so who else is there? So Joel's there at seven. So tell me who else is there. Because if Malik Neighbors is there, Roma Dunze is there, I'm going to defer to the Titans big board. I could absolutely see a scenario where either of those guys is higher on the big board. And then to me, you have to go with that. You have a lot of needs as a football team. And I do think with Joel, I think he's the best offensive lineman. He's obviously a left tackle, which is important, and that's what the Titans need. But I don't think, and this is a question I asked to Dan Brugel on Monday, I don't think, and he's not the prospect so good that he's vying for the top spot. Someone asked in our text line this week, how do you compare Joelt to Taylor Lewan coming out of Michigan? And I said, absolutely not as good as a physical talent. Now, Taylor Lewan's big thing was the character concerns, and there was some real concern there,
Sure.
I mean, that knocked him down. But as far as athleticism and all the measurables and all the traits that tell you elite left tackle, Taylor Lewan absolutely ahead of Joe Alt as a prospect. So I think Alt, like, I am happy taking someone if I believe that Brugger has made this comparison a couple times, that he's Jake Matthews, and I'm going to have a guy for a decade plus as a really good left tackle. I like that certainty a lot. But I'm not going to sit here and say absolutely no way would I consider anybody else there, because you have to go with the big board. And, like, again, if it falls at, like, a neighbor's is there, I think it's a very tough decision.
You know, what Mark Dominic said last week's really, you know, I don't want to say gotten in my craw, because I don't have a problem with it, but it's definitely in my head a lot about how it's like I've just figured, you know, okay, you just take Joe Alt, that's it, the end of the story. Okay, he's your left tackle, he goes to the Pro Bowl, on you go. And, I mean, the way he just, like, matter-of-factly, just the idea of, like, oh, man, if Brock Bowers is there, I mean, it's a slam dunk. And then when you guys asked Brugler about him, Joe, and he said, you know, that the two concerns that Dane Brugler had about Brock Bowers, one was, well, if you draft him at 7, he's going to become one of the highest-paid tight ends in the NFL. I don't care about that. That's Kansas City's problem. That's Baltimore and Mark Andrews' problem when those guys come up for contracts and they're going to say, Brock Bowers is making this much, I need to make this much. That's not my problem. The second part was, you have to have a coach that's going to be able to use Brock Bowers the right way. And, you know, if you're just going to put him as an inline tight end, then Brock Bowers is not going to be a special player. But if you've got a coach that's going to move him around and utilize him as a matchup nightmare, well, I mean, isn't that the point of Brian Callahan? Like, shouldn't we be allowed to assume that as of right now, Brian Callahan will be able to do that?
I would think so.
So I keep thinking about this, and I keep thinking about the idea of, look, I want left tackle to be solved, and I want to move on. But could you get a guy for 1 year this year like Andrus Peat to play left tackle, draft a guy in the second round to use as a tackle that can play right this year, who you can flop over to left next year and be your long-term option at left tackle, which is what the Titans did with Michael Roos when they drafted Pac-Man in the first round in 2005. They drafted Roos in the second round, and after Brad Hopkins left, they flipped him over to left tackle. Could you do that in this year's class and still come away with Bowers, or still come away, Joe, with Adunze or Turner? And this is where, like, that numerical grading and the coaching kind of all comes together. Like, if Brock Bowers has a higher grade than Joe Alt, and Brian Callahan says, oh, my God, think of all the things I can do with Brock Bowers. Well, you know, Fitz made a point on the show earlier today that the four best tight ends in the NFL were probably the four teams that made it to the conference championship games, right? Kittle, Kelsey, Andrews, and Laporta. Those might be the four best tight ends in the NFL. And those guys are all used. You know, they're not just strictly inline tight ends. So I guess Andrews kind of is, but different offense. But so to answer Caroline's question, no, it's not that simple. The two things that matter are this. The first is, how good is the guy you're picking as compared to Alt? Is he significantly better than Alt? Is he the same as Alt? And then the second question is, we're told this is a deep tackle draft, but how deep? Because if it's deep to where there are 7 tackles and there are 9 teams that need tackles, well, when you come back again at 38, there won't be a tackle for you to take. But if there are 15 tackles, or there are 7 tackles and 5 teams that need tackles, then maybe you can get one there at 38. And I just don't know the answer to those two questions. So I'll just answer Caroline's by saying, no, it's not that simple.
Okay, I would agree. A lot of agreeing on today's program.
So friendly. Such a friendly episode.
You know what I was thinking about earlier today? I was listening to your show, Caroline. Uh-huh. The idea about whether or not Cincinnati regrets taking Jamar Chase over Penei Sewell. I think they do.
It's hard to say that they do because they went to the Super Bowl. But also, right. What's the knock on Joe Burrow?
That he's never healthy.
He can't stay healthy.
But see, like, if... Just I looked at that draft earlier. There were 3 tackles that were taken to play tackle in the second round. They all suck, including Jackson Carmen, who the Bengals took. I think he's made 6 starts over 3 years. that was not a deep tackle class outside of the first round. But then there was, you know, Nico Collins and Amon-Ra St. Brown, and there were other receivers in that draft. And it's like, if you're Cincinnati and you knew that there were receivers outside of the first round, but you didn't know that there were, but there were no tackles outside of the first round, wouldn't you take the tackle and then get the receiver later? Kind of what Detroit did.
Like, Nico Collins and Amon-Ra St. Brown are good receivers, but they are not Ja'Marr Chase.
I don't know, man. Amon-Ra St. Brown's pretty good.
Amon-Ra St. Brown is not Nico Collins either. No, but he's not Nico Collins. He is really.
I mean, I'll say this. I don't think it's close between Ja'Marr Chase and Jackson Carmen versus Penei Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, agree.
Like, so Detroit clearly got the better two players there.
True. I would agree, but Cincinnati got the better receiver and a much worse tackle.
Yes.
But Detroit hasn't been to a Super Bowl.
No, but if their coach could count, then, you know, they probably, although Joe probably thinks what Dan, what's a freaking guy's name? Doesn't know how to goes for it every fourth down.
Dan Campbell?
Campbell? Probably thinks he's a brilliant strategist. Okay, Caroline.
Don't know his name because you only call him Coach Updown.
I'm a huge fan of his
in-game tactics. Really brilliant.
Coach, go for it. All right, Caroline, who wins this week?
There is a lot of agreeing on today's program, which feels a little icky to me. But I will say Jared wins this week because your case, like if I'm Amy Adams Strunk, your case for Drake May would convince me.
All right. Because that's because you like him.
Basically because he talks more. So because he talks more, and takes up all the oxygen, and then I have none left, and I'm just like,
you're
okay,
more than
man.
Welcome to talk as much as you would like. I'm not holding that against you. There's no time limit here.
I'm not saying that you're limiting me, but I'm saying that when Jared talks forever and ever, like, we have to have breaks on this. I mean, I'm trying to think of the good of the station, for crying out loud, you know?
Let Jared worry about the good of the station on Jared's program. I think Jared's doing okay right there, I'm just saying. I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah, listen to this.
I'm kidding. Jared versus Joe is presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Thank you, too, very much here on our program. Stillman and Company will react to that. Roll along 102.5, 106.3 the game.
I had Fichanu down a tier because I don't think he is as complete as Joe Alt. I think the quarterbacks are more complete at their position, as we talked today, than Fichanu is. That doesn't mean Fichanu's not going to be a great player, but I just had him a tier below.
Do you think Fichanu has a chance to be special, number one, and number two, does that determine?
I think he'll be, a day one starter. I don't think he'll be in the Pro Bowl category or top five at his position by the time it's said and done. But he'll be a solid starter that you can win 17 games with.
There you go. That was Rick Spielman talking about the tight end position and the tight end the left tackle situation, and saying, like, look, Olu's good, but I mean, he's not Joe Alt. You know, Alt's going to be Pro Bowler, best player, whatever. Fast news, just going to be a starting left tackle. So I got some bad news. And again, there is a difference between Jared Stillman's opinion and what Jared Stillman is hearing is the word on the street. And so my opinion is that I do not think the Chargers will draft Joe Alt. I have guaranteed that the Chargers will not draft Joe Alt with the fifth pick. I am hearing that the Chargers coaching staff loves Joe Alt. The Chargers coaching staff loves him. Somebody told me that the Chargers coaching staff, and Harbaugh does make the decisions there, but I don't know if this is Harbaugh or if this is somebody on the coaching staff, but that there is a sentiment that they very easily could move him to right tackle and that they think that he is by far the best offensive lineman in the draft. Now, I'm not sure that really means anything because a lot of people, probably think that Joe Alt is the best offensive lineman in the draft. And again, the Chargers have a left tackle in Rashawn Slater. And they have a right tackle in Trey Pipkins. You know, everyone's like, Harbaugh is just going to build this thing on the offensive line. It's like, but when he was at Michigan, did he not recruit receivers? Did he not recruit tight ends? And so, again, I don't know what the Chargers are going to do. I have heard that the Chargers coaching staff loves Joe Alt, thinks they can flip him to right tackle, and they think that he is by far the best prospect on the offensive line in this draft. Not that that's anything shocking or new, but that does seem to be the one team that you're in contention with when it comes to Alt, or at least that's what the public perception is. You know, New England doesn't have a left tackle. They let Trent Brown go in free agency, and we never talk about them, but it's because it's like New England has to go quarterback, whereas these other teams don't necessarily have to do it, but the Giants have two tackles. The Giants actually have three. Arizona has two tackles. They drafted one in the top 10 last year, so they're kind of out on the alt market. I don't see the Chargers with any wide receivers, and Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers should be available to them. But again, I was told that the Chargers coaching staff absolutely loves Joe Alt, so keep that in mind. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll wrap the show up next with, again, a story that I read today that I can't say I'm really shocked by. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063, the game.
Reporters, one I know, the other two I trust, Don Van Notte Jr., Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, are reporting Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, when he was going to hire a coach, spoke twice with Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick's former boss, owner of the Patriots. They spoke twice. And during those conversations, Kraft acknowledged he felt betrayed by Belichick at the end. They were not trying to sink him, but they weren't going to send him a lifeline and get him hired. They were brutally candid about Bill Belichick. So first of all, Belichick ruled with an iron fist and was never terribly collaborative. If you're seeking a great job referral after 20 years of keeping your thumb on people, good luck. It's the basic physics. For every action, there's a reaction. There's a reason Brady's adored and Bill's not. He even alienated the greatest player in league history. So again, you can lead in several different ways, but it will not end well for people like the late Bobby Knight or maybe Bill Belichick.
So that was Colin Cowherd today. Again, the story is that Bill Belichick didn't get a job because, well, nobody in Atlanta wanted to work with Bill. The owner liked Bill, but all the lieutenants didn't want to work with Bill. The GM didn't want to work with Bill. The president didn't want to work with Bill. None of them wanted to work with Bill. And so it was like, well, you know, none of these people want to work with Bill, but Bill has assured us that he'll be able to work well with these people. But Bill has a history of not working well with others. So what do we do? And what I've learned in life is this. It's easy to get what you want. It's easy to say, okay, you know, I want to be head coach. I'll be head coach. You'll have the power. I'll be head coach, and we'll go from there. The hard part is proving to somebody that you actually can be agreeable and can work with others. Bill's got one way to do that. Be a coordinator. He won't do it, but that's it. Because everybody's afraid if they hire Bill Belichick in a couple of years, they'll have to fire Bill Belichick, or Bill Belichick will retire, and then Bill will have completely uprooted their entire organization. And I can't say that Bill hasn't given everybody enough reason to think that that's likely to happen. If you really think Bill can get along with others, just look up the name Bobby Greer. That's going to do it for us. Stillman & Company, we are out of here. Tomorrow at 4 o'clock, Roman Yossi will kick off the Preds playoff preview show right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders is next.